Welcome back to the Blunt Force Gamers Podcast. I'm your
Hola.
host. Hola, he says. That's right. I'm your host, Game Goblin.
Darth Blasphemous in the house.
Mr. Hola himself. And Kazrakan.
The Lord Dragon. Hello.
Well, that's what you're going with?
That's been what I've been going with. Kazrakan the Lord Dragon. Have you not read the bio?
Yeah, you Lord Dragon, yes, but last time you were like, let the dragon soar or something like that.
Yeah, opening catchphrases. We'll do that in next week's meeting.
Okie dokie. All right, so today's episode will contain two topics. We're shortening the episodes down to 30 minutes, by the way, for our new listeners and our old listeners. Anyway, our topics is we're going to start out with some DM tips.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, because this was inspired, actually, by the worst DM I have possibly ever fucking encountered. And for the second half, we're going to move into more DM stuff. So this is going to be a totally Dungeon Master, Game Master episode. So the second half, we're going to talk about encounters in your game.
Things like, now, to clarify, this is things like how to properly plan challenge.
Well, we're going to take a first look at the worst GM ever.
Yeah, this motherfucker.
And I want to throw in some stories about some really bad GMing I've seen when I was in other campaigns and other people just telling me stuff they've done.
This is going to turn into a rant session.
Do we do anything else?
That's right.
What
okay.
About you, Kazzer?
I'm sure I can. I'd have to go searching because most of the time, like, I just forget the bad DMs.
I mean, I'm going to bring in some of the bad stuff I've done. I had to go and retcon something this week.
Dude, this GM is so bad, I can now use him as a trump card over worst GM ever. But anyway, we're going to get to that in a moment. Right now, it's time for our intro.
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
And we're back. That was another fast 20 seconds gone by.
Oh, yeah.
It always seems like it just goes in the blink of an eye. It's insane.
It was a suggestion by Mr. Carson. Shameless plug towards Attention Span Games and Replicants.
Rightly deserved.
Oh, and don't forget D and Dizzle.
Never forget D and Dizzle.
Laser Metal.
I still want to play a rapping orc.
We're going on the camping trip, dude.
I know, I know. Anyway, to open up this topic, and it's really hard for me to form words when I actually think about this motherfucker. I mean, really, seriously. I've been gaming for 25 years now. Literally rolling dice for 25 years. I figured this out the other day. So I got a quarter century of gaming time under my belt. And this motherfucker has gone so far to do shit I have never seen before. And not the good stuff. I mean, seriously. This self-centered, self-absorbed, egotistical, arrogant, pompous, duplicitous twat
wow.
Has gone way off the fucking deep end. And I'm not going to name call or name drop or anything, but I may make a few references to how this person left a crater in my heart that totally frayed at the edges of sanity. And that was actually a really clever little... People on the inside will get it. Anyway, this stupid motherfucker has broke all seven deadly sins. In fact, they have inspired me to get my camera out here soon. And I'm going to record a seven-episode series of the seven deadliest gaming sins because they displayed every last one of them.
Damn.
They even went so far, and I got screen caps, and it's going to be on the YouTube thing here soon.
Whoa.
They went so far as to say that the game was about their enjoyment, and the players did not matter.
Yeah, that's sin number one.
That sounds a whole lot like pride.
Yes, that is definitely going in the pride category. This just getting a screenshot of that alone is fucking golden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really.
That is like the epitome of me syndrome. And I just... Okay, to put it kind of short and sweet, imagine somebody's running around their house and setting shit on fire and then bitches about all their neighbors doing it. That's how this GM acts about their game. They're setting everything on fire, but whenever they have to point their finger, it's always at the players or the GMs or at some other person. It's never themselves.
Isn't that how people are? Like, as a greater whole, people?
But this motherfucker took it to new levels. Seriously.
Okay, so he hit 20 on the scale. Like, all the way, broke the scale.
Well, the old saying, you know, you dial it up to 11, you know, Spinal Tap reference. This person just straight up broke the amp. They tried to turn that dial past 11. And at first, you know, I jumped into the gaming area there. More as a, you know, because GMs have to branch out. There's always more to learn. Always. Mm-hmm. And so I figured, you know, why not? I'm going to try online gaming. It's been a while since I've done that. I've been in some really phenomenal games. And there's only one chance you get to make a good first impression. This dumb shit poof-linging monkey fucking failed. But I'm like, you know what? I'll give it a chance. Maybe something was going on in the background I don't know about. I'll play chill here, play cool, be a good kid, see what's going down. Then I see the warning signs start stacking up and stacking up, and they invoked sloth really quickly. It took 16 days for me to get my character approved.
Oh, Jeebus.
And that was lucky. There was actually a guy in the queue before me, and his character didn't get approved until like 3 days after mine. Yet the GM, at the same token, is constantly in the chat room chit-chatting and talking to a bunch of the other gamers and stuff, or off playing video games. So you know they have time to give your character sheet, you know, 15, 20 minutes to look it over. Yet they're spending countless hours doing everything but that.
I mean, I put it, so I joined an RPG server, like, 3 weeks ago. I got approved within 2 days. And that's because I had to iron out some stuff to make my idea work with the system.
This the second group I got invited to, actually, the head GM, it took me 3 days to get character approval, and that's because they have the flu.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, they weren't doing shit. They were actually offline. They're like, I got the flu, I'll be back in a few days. I can understand that, but the other side, no. The same GM also went on to do...
Now, before you continue, is this the good GM you're talking about or the bad one?
Oh, bad GM.
Okay.
The bad GM actually, like, would make up your DCs and shit. And there was no way you could win a role if the GM didn't want you to win that role. Flat out. If the GM didn't feel like you should succeed, if the GM felt like you should not succeed, even a nat 20 was not going to get you anywhere. So, unsurprisingly, people were bouncing out left and right. And the only reason I stuck it out for 3 weeks, prime podcast material.
And the lulls.
And the lulls. That's the only reason I stuck around is I'm sitting there, you know, I'm looking at all this shit go down. Players are getting frustrated. People are dropping out before game even starts. And once game started, the cascade effect of failure just compounded. People just started fleeing the boat as it was sinking. And the GM is, of course, getting super salty. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, I'm going to hold on as long as I can to this bullshit. It's frustrating as hell. But this is great material. It's the only reason I stuck around. And I bring this GM up. And the bullshit that they pulled, because there are 7 basic deadly sins a GM should not commit. This person, yes, failed at every one of those. And I think they even added in sins that don't have names yet.
Wow.
Yeah. So, to bring it around to a more positive light, though, from my experience in GMing, there's 3 things to pay attention to. And, of course, the first is rules. This is the foundation of your game. The rules are there to guide you. They're not hard-coded. Yes, they're written in black and white. But for the sake of the next 2 steps, the rules should be subject to interpretation. They should be subject to negotiation and diplomacy. If a player says, I interpret the rules this way, yes, the GM has final say, but the GM should be able to look at the rules and be like, can they be interpreted that way? Or will it progress further down the line if my players are having more enjoyment? So, which brings us to the next one, of course, and most GMs, of course, jump on this one real quick, is story trumps rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I've got a story I'm writing. It trumps the rules. If the only way to progress a story, for example, you're running Darth Blasphemous, a campaign right now where you've got ancient sea creatures that are trapped in ice.
Mm-hmm.
By the black and white rules, that is impossible.
Yep.
The creatures should be dead, but you're pulling some Encino Man level bullshit. So the creatures are busting out of the ice and attacking the players. So in that's an example of story trumping rules.
Yeah.
And it's flavor that makes the game better.
And I mean, they're CR2.
They're CR2. It doesn't matter, but still, The point of the fact is you're breaking the rules to make the game better for your players, to bring out new challenges and new surprises.
Exactly, because they actually worked as a team. I loved it, and they role-played a bunch while we're in combat. Like, their character was like, ah, kill it, kill it. No, save the shells, they're valuable.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Exactly, which brings me to my third point, and the one that should trump both stories and rules. Fun.
Mm-hmm.
So the formula should go, fun comes first, then story, then rules. If the players are having fun, the GM's going to have fun, or vice versa, especially if the GM's having a great time, the players are guaranteed to have a better time.
So, assuming they're not the self-centered type.
Assuming that they're not a certain individual on a roll 20 forum thread who's desperately recruiting people to get pissed at him and walk away in anger. Yeah. Most GMs, however, they do the seven deadly sins. I'm guilty of it. I admit this. There are times when I have done dumb shit behind the screen, even after my GM training wheels have come off. But at the same token, like a lot of GMs, I take a step back, I look at things, and I'm like, how was I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, was this situation my fault? If I had a player get up and walk out of my group, one of the first questions I had was, did I do it, or is it some sort of they just don't cohabitate with the other players very well? I mean, what's the situation here? This GM didn't fucking care. You get up and walk away and they're like, ah, pff, fucking pleb. Not worth my game. Which is amusing because I was one of the original batch to join. All the other originals had left and I'm like, you're recruiting new members as fast as you can to join your roleplay. Obviously something's going wrong here. Dumb shit.
And I mean, speaking as a player who completely derailed not one, but two of your homebrews.
That's what players do.
Exactly.
Everything the GM does not want them to do, the players will do. The GM has to learn to roll with this shit.
Yeah.
If the GM cannot learn to roll with the punches, I'm sorry, you're going to have to just hang up your GM dice. And if you want people to do what you want to do, learn programming. Because,
mm-hmm.
Yes, you derailed my games. I've had so many games derailed, but at the same token, it's going to happen.
And, I mean, we still had fun, didn't we?
Yes. That's the point.
Yeah.
The ultimate goal is to gaming is entertainment. So, yeah, my opening rant on this topic is this duplicitous, self-centered, poo-flinging monkey has less brain cells in his head than a monkey has hair on its nuts. So, I would assume a monkey has it approximately somewhere around, I don't know, this rough ballpark, about 35 hairs per square inch of nut coverage. And if we were to pull the nut sack out, look at that.
You're complicating the math.
I'm complicating the math. I'm trying to simplify it at the same time.
Call it 32 times 10 to about the 8th power.
Now I'm just going to give a rough guesstimate. This guy's probably got about 200 or about 2,000 brain cells. Out of the potential millions available. This just, holy fuck.
I think it's all in arrogance. That guy just sounds super arrogant.
Oh, he is beyond arrogant. He is lazy, arrogant, greedy, condescending. Like I said, duplicitous, self-absorbed. It's all about me, me, me. Narcissist leading towards megalomaniac.
Yeah.
And one of the sidebars to this is I actually think that this person means abso-fucking-lutely nothing away from keyboard. I actually, you know, looking at it from a more psychological point of view, I think this particular GM, away from keyboard, their life sucks.
Yeah.
They are a nobody who's pushed around, a fucking completely sissy boy.
Mm-hmm.
Who everybody just pushes around, and then they take all this aggression to the keyboard and act like they're big dick swinging.
So they're a regular keyboard warrior.
A regular keyboard warrior. You know, go to the internet where I have some power to tell people to do shit and, you know, yell at them where they can't do shit back at me. But if I walk out my front door and act like this, chances are my teeth are going to get rearranged.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's the... I almost pity this individual if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, that's my recent GM experience of a bad GM. And the only thing I could say from this is a good GM... will do just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
They will approach a game with a sense of humility. They will approach a game, for lack of better words, with diplomacy.
Yeah.
you know, they will try to make the game fun by giving and taking measured amounts with the player to make the game fun for everybody at the table instead of just come in big dick swinging. A good GM will, yeah, definitely. That's one of the first things a good GM will do.
And, you know, there are other benefits to this kind of talk. And, you know, the ultimate answer here is this is a case example of bad. Anything that this guy is doing, from what I'm hearing, is not the thing that needs to be done. So, what lessons do we as other GMs take from this?
I wish I would have been able to take screen caps of, like, entire conversations out of this. Just on an educational level. So people can read it and go, these are the things a GM shouldn't do. Because, yeah, if there's a major GM sin, this person committed it. Even if you want to get into the realm of lust.
Yeah.
Which is desire at its core. This GM would bring in DMPCs, who are, of course, obviously cooler than the player characters, and the only way the player characters can have any fun is to attach themselves to the DMPC. Meaning that the people who don't get to attach themselves to this group have now got the sin of lust attributed to them because they want to up their game. They want to be having fun. And the only ones that they see having fun, of course, are the ones following the DMPC around.
Wouldn't that be jealousy?
Jealousy? No. I'm looking at this from more of a desire aspect because, let's say, Kazrakan, you're doing your game, and the only ones who are having fun in your game are DMPC groupies. But since I'm not a groupie, you're a DMPC, how am I going to feel about that? I desire to be a part of this, to have fun.
It's like, say you're at a job, and there's the good old boys club. There's that inner circle, which is very small, and they're super picky. And as soon as one of them falls out of favor, they're pretty much exiled at that point. But you're just standing on the outside, and you're like, I want to go and do this thing that I've got to do for work, but these guys get to do that all the time, and I get stuck doing the BS.
Yeah, it's kind of like how, to put it lightly, is lust is about desire and gratification of said desires, and gluttony is a good another example. It's not always about food. You're not always glutting yourself on food. It can border on greed, where you're glutting yourself on some material item that you don't need, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Gluttony can include things like clothing, or a desire to fucking binge-watch a movie.
Or a TV series.
Or a TV series, yeah. So, yeah, this person included every fucking deadly sin, so I really, I could go on about this person for easily another hour, but for the sake of our listeners, I think you guys might want to give some DM tips, too.
Take it away, Kay.
Well, I mean, the first thing, you know, and I keep we keep harping on this, is just to communicate with your players. It's to talk to people, and don't treat them like idiots, generally. There are exceptions, and there are in-character reactions, and all that shit on the side, but ultimately, like, if you treat people like people, and, like, they matter at your table, they're gonna have fun. You're gonna have fun, and you're gonna be able to tailor the story. Like, some of the good DMs that I've worked with will take story elements out of backstories that you've worked on. Just, you know, I made up this cool character and he's got this cool series of events going on, and some of them are not always good, blah, 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 blah. And your character, and your DM then goes, I'm going to make this a really good thing for him. Boom.
There's nothing,
your main quest.
Of the few things I've seen done in-game, and I've never had the chance to do it myself, really, is the hometown reunion scenario.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun for players. Tons of fun. Because you write in, you know, your character comes from a small village, they're all poor, and you left to go adventure, you know, for some excitement in your life, and maybe you send back a few coins to your family. And then, lo and behold, your GM's like, well, you know, the path is going to take you right through your old hometown. So the character actually gets to go to their old hometown and interact with NPCs and see how shit has changed over time. Players find this really interesting. It's awesome.
It serves a couple of purposes. The first, one, it's GM cheat mode, because the GM can basically, if the player has well written their story or the characters around it, can just copy it out and drop it into their world. So straight up copy pasta action.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is it's gratifying to the player because it means that, one, their backstory was read at all, two, that their backstory is actually in the world, and three, that the DM is willing to put forth the effort to bring that to life.
It's like one of the best goddamn ideas I've ever seen recently. Is a GM specifically would have rumors going around in town. And the players are, of course, finding out information. They want to go adventuring and stuff. The GM would plant rumors into the city, and whichever rumors the characters would latch onto is the adventures he would make. And it was pretty 90% of the game was written by the players without their knowledge. They would go onto a thing, they would latch onto a rumor, or an enemy would say something, and because players have a wild imagination, they would just start making shit up. And the GM is back there behind the screen taking notes of the shit the players are making up and then running that as the game.
That is fucking brilliant.
It is beyond brilliant, yeah.
I mean, what's a better way to have fun than let them actually contribute to the story creation?
It's one thing I always try to add into my games is a sense of ownership for the players. You know, have them take some legitimate control of the world. I mean, yes, I wrote the world, I scripted the world, I shake the gods and everything, but it's really nothing without the players.
Yeah.
And so I try to add in some legitimacy to it, and players going that far, the GM going that far,
Round of applause.
Yeah, I got a number of praise for that guy's creativity.
I mean, that would be fun. I'd probably do that with, like, a low-level campaign where everyone's starting at one.
Yeah.
You know, oh, there's some bandits. We're going to fight bandits. So, I mean, currently I did some bad GM stuff. I took some bullshit we had joked about 2 years ago and put it in my game.
Oh, you brought in Swamp Ass?
No, I'm not playing Vampire.
Okay. Swamp Ass did not throw out to thwing. He hits his enemies with slime.
He got a job as a janitor.
So,
bad gym stuff. Sorry, dude.
One thing I did was I introduced something we joked about where if you kill someone who's magic, their magic is released. And while I put it that, oh, well, that's a world thing, and I didn't tell you guys about it because I was kind of up in the air about it. Bad GM thing. Inform people beforehand. Now, my retcon to this was because they're going after a big, bad, evil guy, that they are encountering new events and things that shouldn't happen by straight rules set by rules lawyers or simply by the way the world has been explained to them is simply explained away as this evil god is sending waves of chaos magic out, which is fucking with the rules. He is basically bending reality a little bit at a time until he arrives.
Yeah.
Think of the Eldrazi in magic.
So I take it that's why during last night's session that I was listening in on, a certain rules lawyer who shouldn't be named was sitting there on Google half the game session explaining the rules to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
Well, no, actually, he wasn't that involved in it, but I mainly explained it away because other people who should not be named were talking to me about it and how it messes with the role-playing of everybody and that should have been known beforehand. Well, I was trying to make a decision because I'm winging it a little bit. I've got a framework, and I'm letting them fill in the blanks, or I'm filling it in as we go. Is they're like, oh, well, what are we doing? What do we know about it? Make me a knowledge check. They roll better than a 15, you know, a little bit, and I kind of let them craft a little. They roll higher than a 30, which, Jesus Christ, level 8 characters do a lot. I'm just basically giving them some bullshit stuff, and it's becoming the world. The world's kind of shaping around.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a caveat I did. That's really more of a sin of ignorance at that point.
Well, one of the things about being a GM, and I'll say this straight up, and it might hurt a few feelings, you know, but hey, fifis, you know, I'm all happy and wonderful when it comes to fist-fucking those, is when you start your career as a GM, the first 2 or 3 years, you are nothing more than a fucking dork. Mm. All right? You're just a fucking dork with a fistful of dice and a head full of ideas.
Yeah.
You really do not earn that title of being called Game Master for at least 2 to 3 years after you start. And that's the training wheel years. You're going to fuck up. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
Left and right, you are going to have games where you are disappointed in, your players are disappointed in it. You haven't gotten the feeling of things yet. It's like learning a new language. The first couple of years, you are going to fuck it up. You're going to get the syntax wrong. You're going to get pronunciation wrong. The spelling is going to get to you. And for the first 2-3 years, I've seen it in other GMs many times over. I've seen it in my own career of being a GM looking back. The first 2 or 3 years, you're a fucking dork.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way about it. You're just a jackass with a fucking screen and people who are willing to sit around and let you try. Or at worst, they will not let you try, but make their characters run ramshot all over you to be power gaming extremist badass motherfuckers.
Which is why I like the group that you basically curated for me here on this, for running my second group through this style of world, is that all except for 2 of them have been DMs.
Yeah.
And they all give me advice at the end of each game session.
Well, like I told you, dude, that's what I wanted to do when you first came up with this idea, is I tapped the best of the best who had that kind of talent. And having former GMs in there, they've been through the ringer before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, their advice is definitely golden, and I'm not going to name names per se, but Mr. R?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's definitely a go-to guy. Me and him bounce power gaming ideas off of one another. From time to time, but we also, at the same token, have a lot of the same mindset when it comes to gaming.
Yeah.
And Mr. J, also known as Thoric in one of our previous episodes, he's definitely a model player to have at your table. So when the idea came up, I picked the best of the best of the best of the best. Sir, West Point with honors! Because any fucking scab just walking in with a character sheet is brutal to a new GM.
Yeah. But I still enjoyed inviting, personally, Nedge and Narciss, because they're like family to me. And...
yeah, but Narciss, never again. Never fuck it again. Or I will just, you know, pull out my power gaming chops and destroy him with a level 1 caster.
Oh yeah, that'll be great. Right?
Dude, he actually got in my face at SakuraCon. He was like, "You want to see power gaming?" I'm like, "Bitch, please." I was gaming when you were still in middle school, sucking other dudes' dicks.
But you know,
for fuck's sake, man.
I love what they bring to the table, because I mean, they'll put a lot of thought into the character, and you know, he just builds a primo build to run primo campaigns.
Yeah.
And she puts a lot of thought into her character's character, and for the most part, it's really fun having them at the table, and it's great to be able to see them every now and again.
I'll definitely give that to Nez. She's very creative with her characters.
Mm-hmm.
She does a lot of the story stuff.
And a lot of the background.
And a lot of the background.
Every detail, down to the clothing items.
And, you know, that's another thing that GM should pay attention to, is when a player comes in and gives you a super detailed character like that, don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. Embrace that creativity, because it's giving you ideas to build shit off of for your own stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, let's just be honest here. You can copy pasta things as a DM.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay, because it's part of the game now. That's the funny thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when we were running in your campaign, where we made the character and you just started throwing background at us and we just kind of rolled with it. It was great. I mean, you were an Azimar in a super totalitarian world, you know, and I was a human from a necromancer's freaking wet dream.
That's because I was trying to go, like, multiplanar on that one.
Yeah.
It worked out pretty well.
It worked out fairly well.
And then there was also the secondary causality effects that allowed you to swap in characters, like when mine got splattoed.
Yeah, well, there was a certain dwarf in that party who the player was being a complete doof waffle.
Mm-hmm.
But Player Sins will be a completely different episode.
I think it's going to be a mini-series.
A mini-series.
You yeah. know what? I agree. So, I'm just kind of gandering at the time here.
Alright, well, you get the last word here, Kaz.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a couple of advices, you know, to kind of kick this back up to a higher note, if we will. Blastroom has actually brought up a really good point. Getting feedback. If you can get your feedback from your players as a novice GM, that is going to help you improve. Like, okay, as things are winding down. Okay, guys, so... what did you think about today? What did you like? What did you not like? Is there something that I can improve on? And let them start talking orderly, in an orderly fashion, and you will get more information on how to better yourself if you're willing to follow through on it. And that's the thing. You've got to be able to do that.
I second that motion.
The third motion passes.
Okay, with all the motions passed, it's time for our break. We'll see you after this musical number that I'm going to randomly pull out of my library. Starting the second half, I should have mentioned this earlier. The back door is open because it's getting warmer outside, so there might be odd noises in the recording, like dogs or children and whatnot, but it's better than sitting in a room sweating with two other men.
It's already hard enough sitting across from him who wears a kilt on a hot day, so I'm glad that he's still got pants on.
You said hard. Oh, and the sounds of traffic from the freeway nearby. Just heard that car pass by, and the microphone definitely picked that up. All right, so Darth Blasphemous.
Yeah, well,
what's our next topic?
Well, this is one which, again, comes from the session I ran last night. And it's something I've discussed with you at length. I know Kazakan's got some good intel on. When a DM is making a combat scenario, doing all the calculations, trying to figure out the lie that is CR, like, what's the best way to run it? Because, like, I basically ran like 17 of these little CR2 creatures at the group, and the group didn't really get that damage, but they had to blow a lot of spell slots and just take a lot of swings at these things.
Well, challenge rating is one of those really wibbly nibbly things, and doing a good encounter with your group is actually one of those weird deals where it's more intuition and instinct than it is logic. Because you can look at the challenge rating of a creature, or if you're playing an old school game, you know, how much experience the group is supposed to be awarded as per the creature's power and all that stuff. And 9 times out of 10, regardless of the game setting you're doing, whether it's a superhero game, a far future game, a fantasy game, or a bunch of cavemen wearing bunnies for hats. Not even dead bunnies, just bunnies. Live lagomorph things or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, it's more instinct than intuition. It's to give an example, when I was running a game with you guys a while back, you ran into 13 dudes.
Love this story.
Chopped a couple of down first round. Next thing you know, you're facing 11 dudes who are a little bit more powerful. And every time you killed one of those dudes, it would reduce the number of dudes on the battlefield, but there were still the ones who were left behind would get more powerful. Because it was one of those weird dream combat things, and you guys were fighting Margulis, who was scripted to be an absolute dick.
He was.
That character was designed, first off, with two things in mind. First was theme, and the theme of that was number 13. So 13 guys, 13 different abilities, and every time the guys got reduced, you'd get down to one guy at the very end who had 13 special abilities.
Yeah.
And all of the numbers that I had involved, whether it was attack bonus or saving throws, which shifted around slightly to change up combat, everything somewhere along the line was filled with that theme of 13. But when I was actually doing the second draft of that guy, or I should say guys, I don't know, it was one of those weird situations. Anyway, the entity. Entity, that works. Anyway, when you guys were dealing with the entity, I was also trying to balance it as far as the players were concerned. Like, what special abilities can I throw on the creature without breaking you guys or breaking the game? But what ability, and there's some abilities I could have thrown on there that would just, you guys would bypass that automatically, which doesn't provide an adequate challenge. But some of the abilities I could throw on there provide too much. So it's a very instinctive give and take, one of those things you learn over the years that, you know, your players, depending on their play style, if they're more role-play centric and they're playing more fun characters, you could actually lower the challenges you throw at them or make them more thematic. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they're more power gaming type players, you're going to be looking at raw numbers.
Yeah. And then there's the poor, then there's Goblin here who had the poor unfortunate problem dealing with both in one group.
Yeah, that's because the wife of one was here and the other one insisted. And he owed me game time anyway.
That's like... God. It's really unfortunate because it's like, it was such a fun game to play in. And I didn't, for that particular encounter, I think we had the most trouble with like six of them on the board. Because it just kept trampling us.
Oh, that was when you guys got it down to three and he got the trample ability and was making a bunch of trample attacks. And he just started steamrolling you guys.
Really? Because the putrid smell is what totally took out my follower.
Oh yeah, well, the putrid smell...
Got him in the first round.
The putrid smell was a good ability to throw into that mix, I admit. That was actually like really slowing down the melee guys. And of course, you know, having people like in their armor vomiting uncontrollably.
It was a power suit.
It was a power suit.
Still, the guy's riding a goblin bag. Yeah. Let's just call it what it is.
Regardless, the point of that situation, though, is I tailored the creature to be a challenge for the group without being too overwhelming, to have some lethality in there, so if you guys did
fuck up,
you know, there was still that risk. So that makes the rewards better if there's an amount of risk. So, yeah, when it comes to challenge rating is more subject to interpretation than just being black and white print.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, a good example of this, I hopped in on Oz over at Purple Hippo. I hopped in on a day hop-in game, right? And it's an ongoing game that his group has, but it's very kind of loosey-goosey. Not necessarily by the rules side of things, but the very story is extremely game reference-centric. And I decided, you know what? I haven't done one of these in a while, so I drafted up like an Eldritch Knight, and I think my only ranged thing was a Firebolt spell. So, You know, I wasn't exactly doing a whole lot of ranged damage. But he threw us at a troll, and like, I heard his commentary on it. It's like, he basically just ran-genned it, saw what it looked like, looked at our kit. Okay, you guys can take this, if you're smart.
It's actually one of those things also that doesn't include just combat encounters, but encounters in general. We had a newer GM, and I'm not blaming him for this one. I'm blaming actually the other players. But we're doing a superhero game, and my character, I was going off the theme that of Spider-Man, basically. They're new to the superhero game. They're not going to have like the super coolest gadgets. The powers are fairly sucktastic. The character had only like a 30-foot teleport distance. The speed to fly at like 30 miles an hour. Like, really shit on the power scale. But to balance that out, because I had a lot of leftover points, if Reed Richards and Tony Stark had Love Child...
With Bruce Banner.
No, there was no Bruce Banner into it. But just the mental acumen of this character. At the beginning of the game, the character had 13 PhDs, mostly in stem cell fields. You know, so engineering, biology, chemistry, you know, the high sciences. And we went through the first few encounters, and my character did not get harsh because I was pulling some Mortal Kombat level evasion. You know, teleport, 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 get the fuck out of the way! Everybody else has taken a few hits, but they were more, I don't know, like the Batman clone guy, he took a few hits. And he was laughing at my character because I was essentially the flying paper cut. I had one ranged attack, and it did...
Meh.
I might as well have thrown an angry kitten at my opponent. That's how useless my fucking ranged attack was. Just angry kitten. Angry kitten. There we go. They're distracted. But the encounter that came up later is the group winds up at a door that they can't get through. And for like an hour and a half, real time, they're fucking with the door. It's a steel door with a breaker bar on the other side. It's been dropped. Plus it's magnetically sealed. So you have to hit a button and raise the breaker bar to get through the door. And the rest of the party is sitting there, and of course, since I was so useless, they ditched me without saying anything, so I was left behind at a superhero headquarters government facility place. Well, they fucked around with this fucking door. And they all get back, and they're like, wow, we've got the guy finally, but it took forever, you know, to bypass this door. We had to punch through a couple of walls and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, it's a damn shame Little Miss Useless didn't teleport 5 feet to the other side of the fucking door and press a button, huh? So, as far as encounters go, if nobody had teleport, you know, we'll remove my character entirely from the equation, even though...
It seems like your teammate tried to.
Yeah. I could have teleported 5 feet on the other side of the door instantaneously and pressed a button as a one-turn action. problem solved. But if we remove my character from the equation, that challenge would have been too difficult for the players to get bypass that door. An hour and a half to turn a fucking knob is too long. Challenges, and again, it's not one of those instinctive things, you know. A challenge, you know, is there another way? Could they have slid a jimmy bar through the seams of the door that's not ferrous material, slide it upward to move the breaker bar out of the way?
Yeah.
You know, there's always other routes. But, yeah, it's just the challenge level is one of those things, even when it's non-combat challenge levels, like puzzles or traps or anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's another one of those issues where it's more instinctive than actually looking at a chart that's listed in black and white on your screen and going, well, this will work because the book says it will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, you know, this could also be talk scenarios. Like, players are doing an investigation, and how they're approaching it is evolving that situation. If you got people being pig-headed muscle brutes, they're going to get very different information than the suave sweet talker over there.
It's true.
Blind bards are great.
Well, it's like,
sure.
Going back on our last topic, the ultimate dumb shit of GMery.
This is his title now.
This fucking fetid pool of vomitous monkey cum does not even deserve a goddamn title. They are due beneath such honors as a title. However, there are some situations where, and I know many GMs would have let this fly in different situations, but my character murdered somebody for the greater good.
Greater good.
Greater good.
Greater good. Okay, well, the guy who they murdered was basically going to get a lot more people killed out of his own ego.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to have some attachment to these people.
Oh, wow.
And another thing is I didn't want to die because somebody else decided to start a war. So,
you usually don't.
To protect the innocent civilians of the village, that person had to go. And the best thing I saw was to murder them and send out peace negotiation things like, hey, the person who was fucking you over is no longer in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And in roleplay, I spent like 4 hours in character formulating a excuse as to how and why they got murdered. You know, shift the blame to somebody else and get the people not to look at me like I'm some sort of fucking freak.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea was to protect them, but I rolled a 21 on my bluff check.
Mm-hmm.
And failed.
Wow.
Against commoners.
Okay, I was going to question that. Like, was this against other adventurers? Or
no, the bluff check was against a small group of commoners. I rolled a 21 to bluff them, you know, tell a bold-faced lie. And I had time to prepare for it. Sure, I didn't have the charisma to back it up, but still, rolling a 21. Most GMs have been like, eh. They look at you skeptically, but they're going to buy it for now.
What was your bonus?
I think it was like a plus one. Or no, plus...
I was going to say, that would have been at least a plus two.
It had to be at least a plus two. I did not roll a nat 20, but I still got a 21 in the end result. Whatever. But again, like you said, you know, different challenges have different requirements. And if I was running a game and one of my players said, hey, I do a really bad thing, but I spend time preparing for the inevitable backlash, I would be a lot more lenient towards them instead of just making shit up on the fly. Like, oh, the dude walks in while you still got the knife in the mayor's face. Oh, well, he just fell on my knife. Yeah. I'm sorry, dude, but the challenge at that point is going to be a lot more difficult than you stab the mayor, put him back in his bed, and then blame an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, encounters, challenges, traps, and all that, it is a lot more instinctive. Like I've said, you know, there's a lot of different variables, and when it comes to monsters themselves, what it comes down to is for, I would guesstimate, somewhere between 3 to 5 game sessions, you're going to start learning your players' techniques. Their tells. Some people are going to build straight-out characters that are just nothing but brute force, or a gal both me and Mr. R know, all of her characters have absolutely zero self-control. Always starts with the most powerful spells first. Every time, which is predictable as fuck. It does, and knowing the player's tells, like you said, you're going to learn how they fight and adjust your challenges accordingly.
Ooh, good example of this.
Okay.
This is a game Doc Martin ran. Right. Doc Martin ran. And he ran it for us with the greater campaign theme of the 7 Deadly Sins. Personified and, you know, fucking shit up, being assholes. All that jazz. And what he did, I think, for Lust, was he gave Lust a two-phase battle. The first phase had one hit point, because Louis figured out, he's figured out that other players, Noah, Gimpy.
Noah.
Yes. Likes to shoot high. He when it comes to it, like, he's very reserved when it comes to things that are not major boss fights.
Mm-hmm.
But when it is a boss fight, guns out, suns out, mm-hmm. all the way to the end, right? And he's yeah. a high-level wizard, so that's things like meteor swarm. Nasty things.
The fun stuff.
Yeah, the fun stuff.
The fun stuff.
So, like, somehow he got the jump on our insanely dexterous ranger. Which kind of surprised us, but sure. And we got a talk encounter beforehand, and Gimpy jumps the gun. Like, you know, I can already tell it's going to be a bitch to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck this shit. And drops a meteor swarm right on her noggin. All of it. This character had one hit point at the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like I was telling you about the gal, me and Mr. Arno, who has no fucking ability to restrain herself or her spells. I could throw in a handful of goddamn minions, and she will open up with a volley of fireballs, destroy them all, and then when the big bad guy really does appear, she's down to, like, magic missiling at every turn. You know? So that's another thing, is you're going to have to learn your group. Your players will play different ways than the rules think that they will play. Kind of like when you're playing an MMO, you know, and the GM has to show up and be like, how the fuck do you get all the way out here? And then I'm having to go, well, I wanted to see what was on the other side of the fence. And they're like, it should have been impossible to get on the other side of the fence.
Well, here I am.
Yeah, here I am. And player characters are the exact same way. They will try crazy shit. And as a GM, you're going to have to watch them throw out a few small test battles, really. Or battles that have specific conditions. If they seem too powerful, that they'll end early, the players still get their win. But you'll learn their habits, their traits, how they work together, if they work together. And you'll be able to adjust your CR accordingly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, again, Doc Martin, who's quickly becoming one of my favorite DMs, because he actually thinks he's been through, again. He started he started the Curse of Strahd module with, like, 7 players. Right?
Strahd.
And what he did with it is he yanked us from our own respective worlds in a very similar manner to what Goblin has done for his homebrew. And he set us up against progressively increased CR rating battles. We beat through a CR2 encounter, a heavy CR2 encounter at that, with flying colors. And then we meet that same, a similar encounter later on, and we're out of position, and it just ass fucks us. And then we got smart and used tactics of our own, so... That's pretty much how that went.
Tactics does play a big role in getting the win, and not enough players seem to use valid tactics. We had a, oddly enough, we had a game a long time ago, and that is, it's one of those D&D funny stories I'm going to have to put on YouTube in full, just because a certain person, me and Darth Blasphemous know, his character got his nutsack cut off, and I became party leader, even though I was the most evil guy in the group. But you know what? My end goal, I was neutral evil, my end goal was to have statues and ballads and all sorts of crazy things. They would be singing songs about me 1,000 years from now. So he was totally neutral evil. It was all about him being all heroic and shit.
Air quotes heroic.
Air quotes heroic, yes. I actually, like, murdered one of the other player characters because they were being too detrimental to the party as a whole. The PKing evil cleric actually joined my side because I pulled my own weight, kind of shit. But to get in the encounters... We had the GM of the game actually used kobolds really, 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 really well. And the fun part was, is by the time we encountered the kobolds, we're level 2. We should be able to hold our own against a bunch of kobolds. And the way things played down is the kobolds being run by the GM were actually using valid tactics. And it hosed us. And, you know, when you're designing an encounter for players, you also have to choose, you know, are the creatures being introduced going to be using tactics? Do they have... It's not just based on special powers or anything like that. Do the enemies have a home front advantage? Are they skeletal archers who are inside the walls firing arrows through murder holes? Do they have height advantage? You know, there's a lot of different things.
Are they rat folk when you happen to be in a swamp? You know.
Actually, I almost killed a group doing something similar. It was troglodytes in a swamp.
Mm.
The troglodytes had full movement because of their natural abilities. And they were using pop-up and pop-out tactics. So they'd pop out of the water, which is murky as fuck, take pot shots of the group, and then dive back into the water. So they got full movement bonus plus conceal. And the players were at least, on average, 2 levels higher than the encounter. They still got swizzled. So
right.
There's a lot of factors. And environment and tactics also play into the challenge. So if the big bad evil guy has some sort of nefarious scheme to have cloned mutants come dropping out of the ceiling during the encounter, and the cloned mutants are only like 5 hit points each, they still have overwhelming numbers. But what if they also have some sort of other advantage? Like they're underneath floor grates, and they're reaching up through the floor grates and just grabbing at people's ankles. Well, now you've added an environmental hazard. So, yeah, as far as encounters go, there's many different variables, and if you just go by the hard print in the book, you're going
to
fail.
Well, to a point, the hard print in a book is a guideline just like everything else in the book.
Okay, I'll grant that.
If you are looking for a straight-out, drag-out brawl, going by the book is probably all right. If you're going for something that actually has a story, you're better off tailoring it to your player.
Unfortunately, I'm going to end this one really quick here on another note. As far as challenge rating is concerned, because, like, you know, the drag-out thing that you're talking about, I could whip up a level 13 illusionist and kill the Tarrasque solo without power gaming. It'll just be character build by the book. So the Tarrasque is meant for a group of four in a long drag-out fight, but an illusionist, it can just smoke them solo. So challenge rating as far as creatures go also is dependent on character abilities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if Darth Blasphemous is running the Tarrasque, and I just happen to be playing an illusionist, I will win 75% of the time. As long as I have one turn to prepare for it, I'm going to win. Or, like, the special guest villain that he wants me to play.
You're going to play it.
Where I can make a level 3 character and take out level 10 party members.
You said level 4.
If I go level 4, I can take on virtually anybody. Level 3, I can take out people at least 10 levels higher than me in solo combat to my heart's desire. I can wipe out kingdoms.
In two different ways.
Yeah, in two different ways. So it actually, it also comes down to, you know, the character builds.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Going back on a previous game, you know, the power gaming guy had a lot of DPS going for him. He was a very physical-based character.
Mm-hmm.
But if I threw in more mental-based attacks,
yeah,
he would have been hosed because that's his downfall.
He made a straight beefcake warrior.
Yeah, he made a straight beefcake warrior. So when you're going by challenge rating, you're also going to have to keep in mind the special player abilities that your players have.
And their weaknesses.
Okay, and on the final note, very last before we close up this week's episode and come back in a couple of weeks, I just have one tip as far as challenge rating goes. If you're a GM and you have a sorcerer in your group, and you were about to go epic, if your sorcerer happens to be playing the psychic bloodline, do not pull an overwhelming monster, for example, the Tarrasque, on the party. Mm-hmm. Because the sorcerer with the psychic bloodline has the ability to run up to the Tarrasque, get instantly killed, and then take the Tarrasque's body over as his own. Thus, you have a Tarrasque with all the Tarrasque physical abilities, special powers, and 20 levels of sorcerer and the sorcerer's mental attributes.
Yep.
So, keep in mind the skills, powers, and abilities your players' characters have at the game table and adjust your challenge rating accordingly. It's not an end-all be-all, for fuck's sake.
Just be careful of rules as written.
Yep, yep.
Read Polymorph.
I love Polymorph. Okay, we gotta end this.
Peace.
Peace.
Deuces.
Blunt Force Gamers.
You are whatever muddies the white.
I'm killing Steve Shives.
I am so blue ball on fucking EA right now.
It means hold on, fuck.
Durr.
Pay me rent, bitch.
Hey! I paid for a 2-liter, you fucker!
3, 2, 1. Ready?
Hello. Feeling tired at the gaming table? Unsure if your game needs inspiration? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you. Now there's a podcast untamed by political correctness that may bring your game some added invigoration, whether it is video gaming, tabletop gaming, or card gaming. Each episode may contain unusual amounts of truth, logic, opinions based on personal experiences, half-assed insights, and random bullshit. The BFG podcast is not recommended for children under 18, nor for children over 18, and is not suitable for those who are nursing, pregnant, recently pregnant, or for those who can get others pregnant. Each episode may also contain crude and or puerile humor of a racist, sexist, nihilist, ableist, jingoist, ageist, or fatalist commentary. Warning! Excessive listening to the podcast may cause the following conditions. erections, tremors, sweating, facial twitching, premature ejaculation, pustulant tumors, nausea, headaches, dizziness, swelling in the left kneecap, lucid dreaming, daydreaming, night terrors, involuntary convulsions, a condition known as sausage fingers, spontaneous rectal combustion, autoerotic asphyxiation, an unusual desire to befriend parasitic space monsters, Bigfoot sightings, and uncontrollable facepalming. Lactation is known to occur in both men and women. Do not listen to BFG if you suffer from any of the following conditions: social justice whining, passive-aggressive hippie syndrome, high-speed battles with a Nexus 6, table-flipping rage quitting, or diagnosed as having no sense of humor. Ask your doctor if asking your doctor is right for you.
Ah, ai janai yo, suki dake da yo.